Chapter 29. Eline couldn't breathe. Kylar hadn't only left her, he'd taken Uli. The rejection was complete. Things had seemed to be going so well. No, things hadn't been going so well. Eline couldn't believe it, wouldn't believe it. She scoured the kitchen for some sign. She found a stain on the floorboards, dark against dark wood, hastily cleaned up. Nothing looked like it had been spilled from the cooking, but she couldn't tell what it might be. Then she found a deep, thin gouge on the floor nearby. She went upstairs. Kylar's wet boy grays were gone, as was Retribution. She was sliding the box back under the bed when she saw the Cenarian Sakage symbol scrawled into the bedside table. "We have the girl," the script below it said, in a careful, neat hand. Eline's heart dropped again. Someone had taken Uli, and Kylar had gone after them. The revelation brought fear and joy intermingled. Kylar hadn't abandoned her, but Uli had been kidnapped by someone who knew who he was. Someone was trying to trap Kylar. But where had Kylar been when Uli was taken? If someone had grabbed Uli on the street, they might have left a note on the front doorstep, but Eline didn't think they'd dare to break in with Kylar downstairs. There was a shout from downstairs and pounding on the door. "Open the door! In the name of the Queen, open the door!" When Eline saw Aunt Mia let the city watch in, her heart seized with fear again. In Cenaria, the guards were considered so corrupt that no one trusted them. But then, Eline saw Aunt Mia's obvious relief. It took almost an hour to sort things out. A neighbor had seen Kylar leave, carrying a body over his shoulder. A handsome young man with dark skin, his hair in microbraids, capped with gold beads. Eline knew instantly it had to be Jarl. After Kylar left with the body, the neighbor had gone running for the guards. The guards were only halfway to the house when they were met by the neighbor's wife, who'd seen a woman with a bow enter the house about a minute before Uli returned home, and then leave with the girl. From the evidence, the watch thought the woman was the murderer, thank the god. But they still wanted to talk to Kylar. Eline lay in bed late that night, mourning Jarl and trying to make sense of it. Why would Jarl come here? Because he was in danger? Because he wanted Kylar to do a job? Just to visit? Eline had to think it was to get Kylar to do a job. Jarl was too important to leave Cenaria on a whim, and if he had left because he was in danger, he'd have had bodyguards. So Jarl had been killed by accident? While trying to hire Kylar. Kylar had either agreed to do the job, or he was going out for vengeance. Either way, he'd left before Uli's kidnapping. He might not know about it. By noon the next day, Kylar still hadn't returned. There was a knock on the door, and Eline hurried to answer it. It was one of the guards from yesterday. "I just thought you should know," the young man said. "We talked to the gate guards as soon as we could, but shifts changed and it's hard to get word to everyone. A young woman matching the killer's description left yesterday, headed north. She had a little girl with her. We've already sent men after her, but she's got a good head start. I'm sorry." After the guard left, Brayan and Aunt May looked at Eline as if they expected her to burst into tears. "I'm going after Uli," Eline said instead. "But..." Aunt Mia began. "I know, believe me. I know. I'm the last person who should go. But what else am I going to do? If Kylar comes back here, tell him where I went. He'll catch up with me, I'm sure. If he's already gone after them, I'll meet him on his way back. But if he doesn't know Uli's been kidnapped, I might be her only chance." Aunt Mia opened her mouth to protest once more, then closed it. I understand. Eileen's things fit in a small pack, and by the time she got downstairs, Aunt Mia had packed her enough food for a week. Is Brayan going to say goodbye? Eileen asked. Aunt Mia took Eileen outside. Brayan says goodbye in his own way. There was a horse saddled in front of the shop. It was sturdy and gentle-looking. Eileen's eyes flooded with tears. She'd thought she was going to walk. He says he's had some big orders recently, Aunt Mia said, obviously proud of her son. Now go, child, and may the God go with you. Kylar was standing over the grave he'd dug and doing his best to get drunk. It was still 2 hours before dawn. The cemetery was quiet. The only sounds were leaves rattling in the wind and the complaints of night insects. Kylar had chosen this cemetery because it was the richest one on his way out of the city. After killing the Shinga, he'd robbed the man so he had plenty of money, and Jarl deserved the best. If the gravekeeper were true to his word, there would even be a headstone here in a week. They made quite a pair. Jarl laid out on the ground next to the hole, the gore a darker black than his skin, limbs slowly stiffening. Kylar was more blood-spattered than his dead friend, Cruoror dying into hard ridge on his limbs, cracking as he worked, reconstituting as he perspired. It made him look like he was sweating blood. The grave was finished. Now Kylar was supposed to say something significant. He drank more wine. He'd brought 4 skins and already emptied 2. A year ago, 2 would have flattened him. Now he wasn't even tipsy. He finished the 3rd skin, then dutifully took deep draughts of the 4th, until it was gone. His eyes kept going back to Jarl's corpse. He tried to imagine the wounds closing as his own had so long ago. But they weren't closing. Jarl was dead. He'd been alive 1 second, and now he was simply not. Kylar finally understood the wry look in Jarl's eyes, too. The Cenarian wet boy that Shinga Sniggle had ordered killed wasn't Kylar. It was Vi Sovari, and it was Vi Sovari who had killed Jarl with a red and black traitor's arrow. It was just like Jarl to find humor in it. Jarl confessed his love for a woman as she released the arrow that killed him. Shit, Kylar said. There were no words to express the magnitude of the ruin before him. Jarl was no more. This thing in front of Kylar was a slab of meat. Kylar wished he could believe in Eileen's god. He wanted to think Jarl and Durzo were in a better place. But he was honest enough to know that was all he wanted. Some half-assed good feeling. Even if Eileen's god were real, Jarl and Durzo didn't follow him. That meant they got to burn in hell, right? He climbed down into the grave and pulled Jarl's body in. Jarl's skin was cold, clammy. Morning dew was condensing on it. It didn't feel right. Kylar laid him down as gently as he could and climbed back out. He still didn't feel drunk. Sitting on the pile of soft dirt next to the grave, he realized it was the Kakari's fault. His body treated alcohol like any poison and healed him of it. It was so efficient that he'd have to drink massive quantities to get drunk, just like Durzo had. And I dismissed him as a drunk. It was yet another way Kylar had misunderstood his master, another way he'd blithely condemned the man. It made everything ache all over again. I'm sorry, brother, Kylar said, and realized as the words crossed his lips that Jarl had been exactly that to him, an older brother who looked out for him. Why was Kylar condemned to having revelations about what people meant to him only after they were dead? I'll make it worth something, Jarl. Making Jarl's sacrifice mean something meant abandoning Eline and Uli and the life that might have been. He'd sworn to Uli that he wouldn't abandon her, as every other adult in her life had. And now he was doing it. Was it like this for you, Master? Is this where that ocean of bitterness began? Is giving up my humanity the cost of my immortality? There was nothing else to do. Nothing more to say. Kylar couldn't even weep. As the first birds of morning began singing beauty to the waking sun, he filled the grave.